falas muitas palavras sutis e gostas de senhas, sussurros ardis. A lei tem ouvidos pra te delatar nas pedras do teu próprio lar. Se trazes no bolso a contravenção, muambas bacanas e nem um tostão, a lei te vigia, bandido infeliz, seus olhos de raios-x. Se vives nas sombras, frequentas porões, se tramas assaltos ou revoluções, a lei te procura amanhã de manhã com seu faro de Doberman. E se definitivamente a sociedade só te tem desprezo e horror, e mesmo nas galeras és nocivo, és um estorvo, és um tumor, a lei fecha o livro, te pregam na cruz, depois chamam o Urubu.
Parecem um casal, mas é mentira. My name is Germano, and maybe when everyone will speak, you can introduce yourself. And my name is Germano, and a little bit of my history. I finished my theological studies in 84 and came with Wanda to United States in 85. And we are studying in Evanston, theology, naturally. And I will speak a little bit about the history of Brazil. The history of Brazil and the whole history of Latin America can be described as a history of pain, suffering, exploitation, and expropriation. Because from the first beginning, Latin America was seen as a continent that could provide for the empires good raw materials and cheap for them. In the beginning was the Spanish and the Portuguese that came to our continent and took all the goods that they could find. Silver, gold, wood. After a while, the role changed, and then came England and did the same. And nowadays is the United States that is oppressing us and taking all our goods. And one of the reasons why this happened is that the local elites of most of all Latin America countries and also Brazil agree with the international elites to sell our countries. And how they did this was using military force. Our history in Brazil is very, very, you can see it very, very well. For example, from the beginning, the military was in Brazil and using its force to suppress all the movements that tried to change this role. Even our independence was a product of a military and economical agreement, because it was the son of the emperor of Portugal that proclaimed Brazil an independent country. So for the poor people, nothing changed, because the elite of Brazil during this time was very angry, because all the taxes and money went to Portugal, and they don't like it. They wanted them to have this money. And so nothing changed at all. And during the 60 years of monarchy in Brazil, we had many popular revolts that were trying to change this rule and were very hard suppressed, because the military during this time was always on the side of the big owners of land. And for example, many of these revolts were suppressed, many people were killed. And one funny and at the same time tragic example was one revolt that happened in the south of Brazil in the beginning of this century. And it was the first time that airplanes were used to bomb the people that were trying to change something. But something very good happened. They had two planes only. One, after one mission, crashed, and fortunately didn't kill nobody. And the other one never took off because it had some problems. And so we are very proud of this. During the 20th century, the military always was playing its role in society. We had in the middle of the 20th century, during the war time, a kind of coup that put a general in power, and he stayed during 10 years in power. And after him, they put another civilian, but who was in agreement with the military. Because of this, he was put in power. And so we had in 1956 again a civilian president that was trying to do some change, and indeed. And when he left office in 1961, another civilian took power. And this is important because it was the last elect president that we had in Brazil. It was in 1961 that Jânio Quadros was elected by direct vote. And he renounced it, and the vice president took office, and some problems happened. The United States helped to articulate through CIA some movements that trying to overthrow this popular government that was trying to change and using the popular movement. And so in 1964, we had a military coup again. And with this coup, the Brazilian economy was open to the international economy, to international capital. And a very hard phase in our history began, because the military tried to suppress every kind of popular resistance against the military. And so many people were killed, tortured, disappeared. And was also during this time that Brazil began to borrow money from the international banks, supposed to use in good works, but most of the money or went to bank accounts here in the United States or to Switzerland. And so Brazil now today have international debt about $100 billion. It's the biggest debt in the world. And the International Monetary Fund is trying to impose some measures in our economy, trying to get back this money. But we believe that we don't need to pay it, because we pay it already, all our debt. Because all the money that the multinational corporation take of our land is enough to pay the debt. One important thing is that in 1984, again, the military, after putting our economy in the lowest state possible, again gave the power to civilians. And now we have, after 21 years of military in power generals, we have a civilian. And he and all the others in government are trying to do some changes. They are important, but we believe they are not. They will not change the whole system. They are trying to only to put some band-aids in some problems, but the same structure is present. We have land concentration, a lot of international corporations being in the country. We are suffering some pressure because of this. And maybe Carlos will continue in this line, giving you more information.
It's the eighth strongest economy in the capitalist world. It's something. The United States, Japan, West Germany, France, United Kingdom, Italy, Canadian, and then comes Brazil. In capitalist thinking and in money movement. $12 billion surplus in the international trade, only surpassed by Japan with $50 billion and West Germany with $20 billion. And so it's a big movement they made in Brazil, exporting. It's the second largest exporter of food in the world. We export wheat, soya beans, cocoa, meat, coffee, sugar, tobacco, and others. And we also export cotton, shoes, car engines, minerals, and semi-precious stones, as you will see later. Gold, arms, unfortunately, arms, is the biggest arms producer and exporter in the third world. The capital, as I said, is Brasilia, a 25-year-old city, totally built in the most modern pattern of architecture. They have swimming pools, just to give an example, because people who live here in São Paulo, as I said, is the biggest city with 15 million inhabitants. In São Paulo, we have two postcards and some three slides, I guess. We have a modern subway net, much better than the subway of Chicago, for example. Rio de Janeiro, Recife, Belo Horizonte, Salvador, Curitiba, maybe are names that people who went to Brazil know. Florianópolis and Porto Alegre are also big cities with more or less than 1 million inhabitants. And where you, if you go to Brazil, you can find all modern facilities that you can find here in the United States, like the modern computers, microwave, color TV, skyscrapers, shopping malls, universities, the most modern universities. That's one side from Brazil. That's why we call this meeting Brazil a country of contrast. But we have to say also that 7 children with less than 5 years die each 5 minutes among the 22.5 million who don't have any nourishment or health care. Only India, China, Indonesia, Nigeria, Bangladesh, and Pakistan have biggest rates than Brazil in children death. You see the contrast about the modern and the rich and the situation of the people. In 1984, we had one new case of tuberculosis each 6 minutes, 43 cases of malaria per hour, one case of leprosy, I didn't check in the dictionary. One case of leprosy each 30 minutes, half an hour. One case of measles each 5 minutes. In the factories, in the industry, by lack of security, 33 workers die per hour in Brazil. 70 accidents per minute. 72,000 mutilated or handicapped per year. The salary is one of the lowest in Latin America, $58.24 per month. It means 804 cruzados, that's our money. 58 dollars, but 1 kilogram I have to speak in kilograms. I don't know about pounds and other things. 2 pounds of coffee is $6. Maybe you will say, oh, that's cheap. But if you make $58 per month, you can imagine. 1 liter of milk, 50 cents. 1 loaf of bread, 45 cents. 1 kilogram of meat, about $2. 1 pair of simple shoes, at least $4. But this is worse when we think, I know that is boring, maybe listening to numbers and numbers and numbers, but it's the way, the simple way. I have just said 7 minutes. 1% of the Brazilians have 13.4% of the income. The 50% of poor have 13.6% of the income. Almost the same amount of money for 1% for 50% of the population. 10% richer have 46% of the income. And 40% of the Brazilians live in absolute poverty. Well, of every dollar gained by exportation, 60 cents go to pay just the interest of our foreign debt, which is, as Germano said, 100 or more. We don't know exactly because they don't tell us. But more than $100 billion. I always, when I come to the United States, oh, what's $100 billion? The budget for education in the United States is $240 billion for the next year, is the proposed budget. $240 billion. And our big problem in Brazil is $100 or more billion dollars of foreign debt. Then if we say this kind of thing, I think that you can see or think about what's the difference between a rich and dominating country and a dominated and poor country. But we have something a little similar to the United States. Each candidate for governor in an important state like Rio de Janeiro, next year, São Paulo, or Minas Gerais. Next year we will have election for governor of all states. And each candidate of these big states, they calculate that they are going to spend 1 billion cruzados. How many dollars? I don't know. But if a salary per month is 800 cruzados, and somebody is going in one campaign to spend 1 billion cruzados, you know where is the money that is made there. And a candidate for representative may spend 7 million. 10% of the land owners own 83% of the land. 70% of the amount of land owners own 10% of all the land. Just to give an example, President. Well, in the last 20 years, the number of landless increased immensely. Around 12 million landless families are living in the worst social conditions you can imagine. Many of them try to settle an area to grow up some food for their family, but they are expelled and or killed by armed vigilants called jagunços in Brazil, contracted by the big wealthy landowners more than 100 of these poor people were killed just this year. And the last 20 years, 1,236 verified that. Many others that we don't know. The last 2 years, 4 priests, Catholic priests, were killed because the land conflict. But we have a lot of slides we would like to show you, and Wanda is going to speak also. And so maybe I keep here, and after then, when we are...
I imagine the United States too. The church has many kinds of pastors and many kinds of lay people. And I would say that in Brazil, especially in the Lutheran church, four of us we come from, we have, which is the Evangelical Church of Lutheran Confession in Brazil, we have 3 kinds of different pastors. We say that we have those kind of pastors who make their option for the rich. And these people we consider very reactionary in our church. And they really want to know nothing about the poor and oppressed of our society, which are almost 75 to 80% of the population. And then the majority of the people in our church, and especially pastors and ministers, they are what we call the liberals. And they are aware and consciousness and have consciousness of what's going on in our country, and they take some public positions about this relationship there is, that so few people have own all the means of production and own most of the land, and that there are so many people landless and living in the dumps, picking up decayed food to eat. And then there are those people whom we identify as an increasing minority of people who make their option for the poor people, and people who think that it's necessary to relate theology with the poor and have a social and political awareness of it and try to work to overcome the situation of oppression. In Latin America, the church has always played a contradictory role in society. First, because the church, and now referring specifically to the Catholic Church, has come with the people in power. In the 16th century, the Catholic Church came with the Hispanics and the Portuguese to Latin America. And many of the people coming, they had the sword in one hand, and then they had the cross in the other hand, and trying to bring Christianity to these people, to the natives, to the Indians. And what Christianity did was to annihilate the native culture, as it happened also in the United States, and try to bring this new and white good, as they understand it, culture represented by Christianity. However, there were always movements, and especially in oppressed countries such as in Latin America, of people trying to resist to this people having the power. And the movements of resistance of black and landless, I think German already gave some examples of how Christianity helped black people to keep their own culture. They would, for example, use Christianity and especially Catholic saints and give them a black face, showing that, you know, this is our saint. This is not the saint of the whites. We have our own. Or how the landless used Christianity as a way of feeling humans again and a way of demanding the right of having land. Even the Protestant churches are not exceptions in Latin America. Most of the Protestant churches come through missionaries, and we respect missionaries, but many times what they do is simply represent the interests of their own countries and try to do the same thing the Catholics did with the Indians, trying to bring their culture of the First World. And the only exceptions, there are always a few exceptions of missionaries coming and people who respect the culture of the people from the Third World, or Brazil specifically. Exceptions to this would be also those churches which started as with the immigrants. And this is the case of our church, because our church started with the German people immigrating from Germany to Brazil. And the church represented a way of them to keep together, a way of togetherness. When the Germans came to Brazil, they had promises from the government that the government would give them good land and seeds to plant. But this never happened. And what they found was completely the opposite. And I think many of the stories our grandparents or great-grandparents would tell are pretty much similar to what you have experienced in, you know, since most of you are Lutherans, I would say that the history must be pretty much the same. But something different we experienced in our history as Lutherans is that we were not allowed of having our church. Because if you are living in a country where the majority of the people are Catholic, you cannot have another church. And the only way they could, the Lutherans could worship was, they had their school and they used the catechism and the Bible and the hymnal during the week to teach the kids how to learn. And then during the weekend, they used the church and the same material for the worship. So this was the only way they had to organize themselves and practice their Lutheranism. And only in 1889, when we had the proclamation of Republic, was that Lutherans could have churches. Not only Lutherans, but any other Protestant churches. I'm going to jump a little bit more for the recent history of the churches and the involvement the churches have had. Because even though the history of our churches is very interesting, I think should use our time more properly. And I would like to talk about the last 20, 25 years in our country, specifically Brazil under military dictatorship and the role the church has played in this situation. If you are living under a military dictatorship, you don't have any right to speak or any right to organize yourself or go to any meeting, because everything is censured, you know. And during these 25 years, last 25 years, what happened was that the church became the only way people could go and discuss their problems. And this started a very powerful movement in Brazil, which is called the Christian-based communities. And I think we can talk a little bit more if you would be interested, even after the slides, and making some questions about the way they are organized. But basically, the Christian-based communities try to relate Christianity with the life of the simple people, and simple and poor people specifically. So in a poor area in the city or in the periphery of any city, in the villas, what we call, where the poor people live, the situation is almost of complete dehumanization, and people living in houses which are almost falling in slums or living in the dumps without any water, without electrical energy, without school, without nothing, without anything. So this means that there is so much to be done, and there is no political party which would represent the interests of these people. There is no any labor organization which would organize these people, because everything is controlled by the government. And the only way of you organizing and demanding your rights would be exactly to the church. And this is what have happened in this Christian-based communities. They have used Christianity as a way of being empowered and saying that we are poor not because it's God's will, as we have heard so many years and centuries, but we are poor because there are a few people who are very rich. So Christianity and through these Christian-based communities has done this. Now talking specifically about the Evangelical Church of Lutheran Confession in Brazil, this idea of base communities is not very familiar to our church, but it's very common in Brazil through the Catholic Church. And at this point I have to say that the Catholic Church, not the official church, but segments of the church have been really converted. If you compare what happened during the 16th century, and if you compare what's going on now, you have to see that it is a shift of 180 degrees. It's completely different. Our church has started, as a institution, as a body, has started its political awareness during the 70s. There were always pastors and ministers involved in social activities, but these are cases of individuals. It's not that the church demands or the church takes political positions as a church. And I think we have learned a lot during this last decades with our church, that sometimes we have to forget our basic Lutheranism, which would be we have to respect authorities and civil disobedience far away from me. You know, we have to act actively in society. And this is, I think, something that has been going on more and more in our church. Just to give you one example, in 1982, every year we have a theme for the year, and it's going to be discussed in the whole congregations of the whole church. And for 1982, it was Lord, Land of God, Land for All. And this was a big challenge for our situation, where the land concentration is so abundant and so many people are landless. And we started discussing the whole problem because more and more people in our church were becoming landless because they lost, since most of the Lutherans were immigrants and farmers, they lost their lands because of the economic problems of inflation, and they didn't get the right price for their products. And so they lost their lands. And so the whole discussion of land reform was going on in our church. And it's very interesting that for this year, for 86, the CNBB, which is the National Council of Brazilian Bishops, Catholic Bishops, they chose a theme pretty much in the same way, which would be Land of God, Land of Brothers. And now, in this discussion, we already had this discussion a few years ago, and now they are having. So it shows that there is some kind of walking in the same way in the ecumenical relationship too.
Some of the slides are from our pastor here, Barbara, and the first is one of them. I don't know exactly where it is. I know that's in the south, and the typical German Lutheran evangelical church in the south. It's a factory where rice is processed. Barbara, so. It's a typical house from a poor farmer, probably from German background, in the south of Brazil. You can see it, Comunidade, no, better. Comunidade Evangélica Emmanuel, Evangelical Community Emmanuel, yes. It's also, I guess it's in Pelotas, yes, Barbara? Yeah. Oh, yes. It's typical house of the small farmers. And this man with the beard is Ronald Besler, yes? Yeah. And he is replacing me in my parish now, in Brazil. He's American, from North Dakota. Typical way of transport. I guess that's in Alvorada, right? It's Alvorada is a suburb of Porto Alegre, the capital of our state. Porto Alegre is a city with 1 million inhabitants. And in Brazil, suburb is of the poor people, not of the rich, as you can see. And is this Richard Wangen, Barbara? Yes, he's also an American pastor who is teaching in the seminary in Brazil. We will see a picture of the seminary. This land, they don't own this land. They just went to this land and now they are occupied, yes. And then now they are seeing if they can own this land. Oh, now it's slam. Oh, unfortunately, it's on the wrong side. I guess, yes, the numbers are. but you can see the Pepsi Cola. Yeah. they sell Pepsi Cola. They are very poor, as you can see, but Pepsi Cola they have to sell. Okay. It's a temple, not Lutheran. It's Pentecostal, and as you can see, the man built the front bigger than the church because he is expecting that the church is going to raise. Our church in Esteio, where is my parish, or was and will be again, that's the suburb in Esteio, where I was working, serving as a pastor for 6 years, and we have we are trying to begin with a basis community in this villa, in this slum. All the area, as you can see, is occupied by houses, but the soccer field is saved. It's the house of the president of the association. Here. In this building, we made every Friday a big soup for almost 200 people. I have here on the table a picture. You can see how it works with the fire. That's in Christmas time. They were distributing some pop and hot dog, and you can see how the people was expecting to go into the house to get it. Here another picture of the people waiting for just to have a hot. This picture I took to show the wonder in the leg of this boy, and he is totally careless. They don't have money and nobody would attend them without money. And so it's going so. that's my house. Mine was the parish house, but I was living this little house, 13 rooms. I don't know what to do with all these rooms. But the other pastor had 5 children, and so the house should be big. The back of the house, the community center, where the barbecue are made. And the teas of the women, and to raise some money. It's the church. Pretty nice, huh? Thank you. that's a pastor, a woman, the first woman pastor in our church, Rita Panki. Barbara took this picture, and she. I think that both are friends. Yeah, Barbara. Oh, good. And as you can see, in the hot Brazil, we have to wear the black robe. It's a total contrasense. It's in Rita Panki Parish too, her church, inside, outside. That's tobacco production. As I said, tobacco is one of the biggest export product in Brazil. On the left, this woman is Dorothy Vangen. She is also an American, and is Richard Vangen's wife. Yes. That's another church in yes. Rita Punky, the pastor, is on the right side. The same, yes. Yes, on the left is Claudette Baize. She was living for 1 year in Nicaragua, and now she is back into Brazil. You can see the land is good. Oh, that's preparing the barbecue. And now you will see what is to eat meat. Ah! That's why I am complaining so much about the food here. Now you can understand. That's our barbecue. And I can say that tastes much better than American barbecue. Excuse me. That's Wanda, 20 years ago when she was young. many people know what she is drinking. Yeah, the chimarrão. Yes, it's a typical beverage. Who wants to know it, just come to our room or the porch of Lodge 1. That's a typical bridge. That's Barbara. 30 years ago. You can see the German farmhouse in the south of Brazil too. We are pretty, that's the factory of pastors. This is the seminary. Huh? That's the only factory in Brazil, Lutheran. Yeah, it's okay. That's the old building, or the middle old, and that's the pretty old building. The first, yes. Oh, that's a town called Tubarão, no, Laguna, where Ruth and I made our honeymoon. Ah! That's Santa Catarina, the state of...
Yeah.
The picture was not taken by the airplane.
No, it was in the top of the mountain. It is almost 5,000 feet. Of. Here are the falls of Foz do Iguaçu. It's in the state of called Paraná, in the border with Argentina. Again.
The woman of one American president saw this falls, she said, poor Niagara.
This is a building, is a city hall in a city called Salvador in the state of Bahia. Bahia has the biggest black population in Brazil because it's a harbor. Harbor where the ships came with the slaves to sell the slaves. Here you have again in Salvador an elevator that transports people from the high city to the lower city. If you don't use the elevator, you need to make a big detour bus. And this building, this yellow building, was the place where they sell the slaves, and now is a cultural center. Here is one of the most famous churches in Brazil. It's a Catholic church. It's called Our Lord of Bonfim. People believe that if you go to this church, you can be blessed and cured from some sickness.
Is Jane here? No, Jane got something to put in her arm, blessed in this church.
Here another church. these churches is from the 16th century, 17th century. Some of our beaches in the northeast with the coconut trees, some coconuts.
Coconut is not white.
Here is another big city in the northeast now in Brazil called Recife. It's the biggest city in the northeast of Brazil. Here again another view of the city. Here's the person in the middle with the is Dom Helder Câmara, and he was the Archbishop of Recife and Olinda, and he's now retired. He's traveling and speaking about the reality of Brazil. And
he was here in the United States in June.
Yeah, here. This is the next slides are from the place where I made my internship in a slum, and this was a Catholic procession where people were going. Carrying cards commemorating the 18th century, no, 1800 years of birth of St. Francis of Assisi. Here again. Here another procession. And what is interesting about this procession is that they not only praise the figure of the saint, but they also relate the life of the saint and their lives. They associate the message of the saints and how they can apply this message for their day, for their problems in nowadays. Here again, a saint. And what is interesting is that the crown and some arrows that are in the statue are from silver and gold.